everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Mike and Amit Talk Tech. Today, we are going to dive deep into something that's been brewing for a while, and that is AI regulation. So some of you might know that EU recently passed a very, very significant AI law. We are going to discuss that. We're going to discuss a few other aspects of these regulations. But before that, right, I have a question for Mike. Mike, why do we even need regulations for this, right? I mean, can't we just let it be? Why are we trying to be innovation killers by having all these crazy government regulations telling us how we can and cannot use AI? What's going on here?
And that's not a bad question. I mean, lots of people are asking exactly that question. You see on discussion boards, people saying, come on, aren't we overregulated already? Why do we need more regulation on AI? It's just going to slow things down. Government always screws things up. Bad idea. But I think, you know, my point of view on this is that AI, and particularly generative AI, is so powerful that I think you need checks and balances for it. I really do. You know, if nuclear, right, is also powerful. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. And because it can be used for bad, we need some type of regulation, and we do. And I think it's the same for AI, that the power is just so big that we need some way to ensure that it's used for good, that really, you know, bad actors don't get hold of it and are able to do, you know, really negative things with it. The potential is definitely there. So I welcome regulation. I don't want it to be overregulated, that's for sure. But I think a certain level of regulation makes a lot of sense. But I guess, you know, let me bounce this back to you, Amit. You know, why don't the usual rules work here? Why do we need, you know, special regulation? What's different about generative AI than, let's say, traditional AI?
Yeah, I think there's a few things, right? I mean, first, even let's take a step backwards and say, what's different about AI versus all the things that came before it? You know, because we had data for the longest time. We've had, you know, analytics for the longest time. We've had social media for a while now, right? Or even other kinds of media. What's so different about AI? And the way I see it is there's two or three things that are fundamentally different, right? First of all, is the huge explainability issue. The moment you get into something like deep learning, the outcomes are simply not explainable. We don't know why something is happening, which kind of raises all kinds of questions. Now, you could argue that we don't always know what's happening in our heads, but we all know we have different sets of rules and different sets of guidelines when humans are taking decisions versus when machines are taking decisions. So that's the first thing, the explainability issue. The second thing is most AI ingests incredible amounts of data. You know, unlike traditional analytics or even regular methods, AI, whether it's traditional AI, whether it's generative AI, it just requires absurd amounts of data. And consequently, there is a clear war on to get more and more data, which can lead to a seriously slippery slope in terms of ethics, in terms of regulations, in terms of privacy, those kinds of things. So you need to regulate what kind of data is and is not allowed to be put into this. And finally, I think the kinds of things that AI is capable of, right, the kinds of decisions that could be automated using this particular technology are significantly more impactful than what the previous technologies previous technologies allowed for. And this is especially true as we move into generative AI, like you said, right? I mean, it's no longer just automating machines on shop floors. This could be, you know, automating the emails that you write and the diagnoses that you get or the legal briefs that our lawyers are sharing with us. So this really, really needs an oversight. Now, even there, right, there's two broad philosophies. I mean, if you're more American, the philosophy we have in the United States is let things run on their own until something blows up, right? Versus in Europe, it's more like, before something blows up, let's come up with some kind of commonsensical sounding regulations to work this. And there really is no right way to do it. We're all still figuring it out, right, Mike?
Yeah, we're still figuring it out. And certainly that is the kind of ethos in the different parts of the world, right? The US, with its focus on innovation, from a regulatory point of view, has taken a quite a fragmented approach. Each government department, whether it's the, you know, the FTC or whatever it is, kind of has their own rules that fall under their jurisdiction. There's been a couple of executive orders released by the Biden White House. You know, I'd say most of the regulations so far in the U.S. is about promoting American interests more than anything else, right? So I, you know, rather than putting up barriers, it's almost taking down barriers to allow innovation to occur. And it's kind of an American first attitude. There are some regulations there that, you know, around protection of personal privacy and copyright and these types of things. But it's a relatively light touch. And certainly there's no kind of overarching legislative framework that covers significant aspects of AI. So it's happening, but it's happening in a very fragmented way. The EU is taking a kind of very different approach. It's taking, traditionally, as it has done, a quite robust continent-wide approach, at least EU state-wide approach. And Amit, as you know, it was last week that, as a surprise to many, in fact, it was passed. You know, people expected it to be, you know, hung up in discussions for months and months. But no, it was passed last week, and it will go into effect relatively soon, I think in a couple of months. They say by April or May. And then, you know, organizations will have a year or so to get their act together, and then it'll be fully enforced in sometime in the mid-2025. But it's the first example of multinational regulation specifically focused on AI. And for that reason, it's interesting.
It really is, right? Because if you really look around the world at other geographies and other big players, we still haven't seen anything comprehensive coming out of them. China, I don't think, has a overarching AI regulation as such. They've regulated bits and pieces of it with data and the outcomes. India doesn't have one. The UK doesn't have one. The US has presidential directives, like you said, but, you know, those can go away in November. They can significantly change in November. You know, quite honestly, being an American myself, I'm a little cynical about regulation in the US. It's like you said, not only is it self-serving, I personally feel that whenever the U.S. does come up with its regulation, it will be written by the five companies that control AI, right? I mean, through lobbying, that's basically what's going to happen in the United States. But since the EU regulation is the one we actually have, I'd love to get your thoughts about it. What do you think about the regulation? What parts of it do you like? What parts of it perhaps concern you? How do you see this going?
I actually think it's pretty good legislation. It's a nice balance between, you know, protecting the downside without inhibiting innovation too much. It's not as heavy-handed as you might expect coming from area that has traditionally been quite rigorous in its legislation. I mean, basically, it's dividing AI into four different categories. Right. So there's an unacceptable risk category. There's a high risk category. There's a limited risk category. Then finally, there's a minimal or no risk category. And the rules and regulations, you know, are different for each of those categories. So first, you know, you got to figure out, where does your AI sit according to the regulations? Is it unacceptable, high, limited, or minimal risk? And then you've got to follow the rules and regulations for that level of risk. So unacceptable risk is basically they're saying, no, not here. You cannot do this. So things that are on this unacceptable risk category, social scoring systems like we have in China, right? So your behavior is linked to a social score, and that's kept on every single citizen. That will not happen according to the legislation in the EU. They see unacceptable risk of any AI applications that exploit vulnerable populations, particularly children, but others, they're very, very sensitive to that. And they've actually got something in there as unacceptable, which is general purpose, real-time, remote biometric identification. So imagine if you're in a publicly available space and you got cameras and you're using, you know, facial recognition or something like this for real-time identification. Those are off the table in the EU. Of course, there are exceptions, Amit, as you might expect for law enforcement and so forth. They're allowed to do it, but the rest of us are not. But then you've got the high risk category. And the high risk category is a little bit fuzzy, but these are things around, you know, traceability. You know, they want to make sure that activities are traced. They want to make sure that before anything is offered to the market, they're rigorously assessed and any big risks are mitigated. They want to make sure that the data sets have minimal biases, as little discrimination as possible. They have wording in there about having human oversight of these systems. And they want to make sure there's a high level of robustness, security, and accuracy in those systems. And they're particularly sensitive to anything that's linked to critical infrastructure, education, or essential services. And then there's kind of a limited risk group. And that's probably quite a big category, a limited risk. And here it's about letting people know. So this is written into the statute, letting people know if they're interacting with AI or if they're interacting with a human being. So chatbots, in the EU, you gotta tell people, I'm a chatbot. You know, this is not a human being you're dealing with. Deepfakes being regulated under this. So basically, and any time that you're not interacting with a human being, you need to be told that's the case. And then the final category, minimal or no risk, you know, basically the Act does not apply to any AI systems that are deemed to be minimal or no risk. So there's a lot of categories here that where AI is being used, which is very, very little risk. And basically, the Act doesn't apply to all the spam filters or AI-enabled video games. I mean, all kinds of things that the Act will not apply to.
So personally, I think there's three things that I'm not saying concern me, but there's three points I'd like to make on this, Mike. The first one is that what disappointed me a little bit when the Act was passed was that they did not regulate the foundation models for generative AI. They chose to regulate the outcomes. Now, I think that was a practical compromise that was eventually reached that allowed the bill, like you said, surprisingly, to actually pass. I suspect that if they had actually held up before the foundation models, it may have still been held up. So something's better than nothing. But I would have liked to see foundation models being safe.
And I think that was to protect, you know, there was the French push back on that. The Italians pushed back on that because they wanted, yeah, the Germans too, because they wanted the opportunity to build their own foundational models and not have that, you know, ability inhibited. Now, there is something in the Act which is quite surprising to me as well, which was that open source systems are also not covered as long as they're completely open source. Now, the definition of what's open source and what isn't is not an easy one. There are all kinds of shades of gray there, but fully open source systems are allowed under the Act until they become sort of for profit or closed. And as soon as they're closed, then the Act goes into full force.
I agree. And the second thing is, what's defined as low risk can very quickly change categories, right? And the obvious thing that comes to my mind is chatbots. I mean, you could envision chatbots, especially powered by generative AI models, that could encourage all kinds of strange behavior amongst children and amongst people and those kinds of things, right? And that's always great. And the last point, and again, this is true of anything anywhere, the world is the unintended consequences. We don't know what this is going to do for foundation models. Now, Europe already has at least one in Mistral. We don't know what this is going to do for innovation. We don't know if this is actually going to make the rich richer, as happened to a certain extent with GDPR, if you really think about it, right? So those are the things that worry me. But yes, I agree with you. Overall, I think it's a solid piece of legislation. It's very European in character in the sense that they really seem to be looking out for citizens. Some influence of lobbyists, but definitely not terribly concerning is how I read it.
So critics, critics will look at this and say, yeah, it may protect the downside, and that's good, but it's also going to inhibit innovation in the EU. So that if somebody, you know, wants to invest a lot of money to build an interesting AI solution or model, they're just not going to do it in the EU. They're going to go somewhere else where the legislation is not as, you know, onerous or intense. Do you think there's merit to those arguments?
I'm not 100% certain there is, right? I mean, there's a few things. So yeah, you could move outside the EU to develop the foundation models. Eventually, the EU market is going to be big enough. It's too lucrative for you to pass up. So if you, the moment you touch the EU market, you're going to be beholden to these legislations anyway. So I suspect that what's going to happen is that this legislation actually becomes kind of like a bedrock or a foundation legislation for different, you know, rules and laws around the world outside of China. So I really think EU has done the smart thing by getting ahead of it. And hey, here's a positive unintended consequence that's possible, which is that because EU companies have to abide by this anyway, it might actually lead to an increase in Gen AI innovation in the continent, because they're already there where they have to abide by the laws, right? I mean, they know how it's implemented, how it's regulated, the kinds of things they have to be careful for. So you never know.
Certainty, right? I mean, at least you have some degree of certainty, whereas you know in other parts of the world, legislation is coming. You just don't know what it's going to look like, so it's difficult for you to make big investments and big decisions, but at least in the EU, you have that certainty. And I think you're probably right. You know, we've seen it before. I mean, GDPR was a good example. The EU was kind of first out of the gate with that legislation. I'm not saying it became standard everywhere in the world, but a lot of other national and regional legislation became based on GDPR. So it kind of became a de facto standard elsewhere, and that may well happen with AI. And certainly, you know, I think it needs to happen because we're not seeing much progress on industry self-regulation. If you've been keeping track of what's going on with OpenAI, corporate governance is not really doing the job. So we need it. One of the questions that I have still, which is unresolved, is enforcement. So you can have the legislation, and I think, you know, the big public companies will comply because they have to. But enforcement beyond that, I mean, how much can you really monitor what's happening in somebody's basement, right? Somebody can get a few dozen GPUs and create their own model. They could download an open source model from Mistral or Llama or any of these other places that kind of build something that's non-compliant. And there's very little way to monitor or enforce what they do with those technologies.
So I was speaking to a couple of CIOs based in Europe, large companies, over the last few weeks on exactly this point, Mike. Some of them feel, and I kind of agree with their logic, that this might end up being a very bimodal kind of a regulation in terms of its implementation. They feel that the large companies will be under intense scrutiny, because it's so front and center, it's very, very difficult to hide their AI projects and their AI outcomes. So they'll be under more scrutiny than they were for GDPR. Under GDPR, if you screw up, then yes, the EU came down on you like a ton of bricks. But over here, you don't need to screw up. You just need to put something out in the market and you'd be in the spotlight. On the flip side, you may just not have the resources, exactly like you said, to regulate all the little players sitting in their basement and garages who are working on this. So they might escape under the radar for the longest times, even with publicly facing kinds of applications. So interesting times ahead, I think, is what we can say.
And I think if we summarize, AI has incredible benefits for productivity, for quality, for creativity. But there's also a potential downside, right? There's huge biases, there's copyright infringement, there's deep fakes, there's, you know, potential for all kinds of employment impacts. And so, you know, regulation in this case is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, kudos to the EU. It's not perfect, but it's a step in the right direction, at least in our point of view. So that is where we're at the moment with legislation. This is a constantly shifting and changing landscape. So I suspect we'll come back to this question in the future as more legislation gets enacted in different parts of the world. But let's leave it there for now. Amit, it's been a pleasure as always. And if you want any more information about us or about IMD, you can go to our website. It's imd.org. That's imd.org. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you all next time for Mike and Amit